Session number 22187, Rule 3.
Is Barney Barnfield Reel 3?
Between the sinking of the Royal Oak and Scarborough Flow and the time you went up to Narvik, what did you get up to? What were your jobs?
Well, I suppose mostly they were convoy duties or chasing submarines. There were always rumours of submarines being sighted here or there.
This is out in the Atlantic?
And in the Atlantic, yes. And I always think it was amusing, but I suppose it wasn't really. We used to do raids on the Skattegat. The whole flotilla would, and we used to try and camouflage ourselves in some ways with pieces of canvas, whatever, to look like a merchant vessel, and we would change our navigation lights, and we would get right up into the Skattegat and try and find a German convoy, and creep up alongside the last ship in the convoy. We'd put all our navigation lights and whatever, and we'd everything would be deathly quiet, and we'd try and creep up behind this convoy, you see, and go alongside and try and capture the last ship in the convoy. Now, obviously you required a boarding party to do this, and a boarding party would be detailed off and used the half a dozen rifles and two or three pistols which we had. But as boys, four boys, two in the forecastle and two on the quarter deck, our job was to jump on board and secure the lines. Secure the bow line, secure the stern line. And for protection, we had cutlasses. Now, you wouldn't credit it in that day and age that we had these, every ship carried, or in the, certainly ships that I've been on, had cutlasses. And they were fearsome things. They were about this tall, and I was about 2 inches taller. You see, we had this huge cutlass. I don't know what we were supposed to do with it. I was supposed to cut somebody's head off or something. But it put the fear of God into us. But we always had these cutlasses, and we were supposed to use them, I suppose. Thankfully, we didn't have to. But that was the idea, that if we were, if anyone came toward us, we would attack them with this cutlass, you see, whilst everybody else was trying to take over the bridge and whatever. But
did you actually catch a merchant ship?
We did catch one merchant ship, but for some reason or other, the old man let it go. Whether it wasn't German or something like that, but we didn't bring it back to this...
But didn't the escorts rumble you?
To this country. No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
You just popped in and...
Very, very quietly creep up, you see. Very, very quietly. I mean, at sea, you're looking that way virtually more than what's happening astern. Probably somebody's watching that way, but nearly all...
How many of you are involved? How many ships?
How many ships? Yeah. Well, as far as I'm aware, the whole of the flotilla would be there, all the F-boats. Although... We did split up eventually, and I think we were the sixth destroyer flotilla, and we then became the eighth, which and we split up with half tribals and half F-boats. But that's another story, because that finished up quite a disaster for the Fame in the end. In the end, we ran aground. We went aground, and we took a whole flotilla of destroyers with us. Now, I doubt if there's any account of that anywhere.
When did this happen?
This happened after Narvik.
Oh, after Narvik, yeah.
Yeah. You don't want me to talk about that.
Well, we'll come to that in a little while.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Just a bit about your convoy duties. I mean, they were all fairly routine. You'd go out and pick up an incoming convoy, would you, or what? Or go over to America?
Oh, yes. We did several runs with gold.
Gold?
Yes. Where we got it from, I don't know. I can't tell you the ports that we got this gold from. But you've got to remember, you see, that we were boys. And as boys, you didn't ask questions. If you did, you were in trouble. I mean, no one told us where we were going. The old man had his sealed orders, and you went. You waited for someone to spread a buzz, which is a rumour, you know. Somebody said, well, we're going so-and-so. We're going over to Fort Knox with gold. When I can remember taking this gold on board, and it was gold ingots in whiskey cases.
Which port would this be in the UK?
That's what I said. I don't know.
In the UK?
Oh, yes, in the UK.
So it would have been some of the country's gold reserves, I
That's
suppose.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. We would de-ammunition ship and fill all our magazines with gold ingots and get underway. And we usually took them to the tail of the bank off Gourock, where the Queen Mary would be anchored. We'd go alongside her, she'd take them on board, and we would then escort her right out into the Atlantic until she wound herself up to about 32 knots in rough water. I mean, we could do 32 knots, but not in that type of weather, you see. She would, in the end, gradually go away from us, and she was comparatively safe then, because, I mean, a torpedo does about 30 knots, but they've got to be in the right position at that speed to, if a ship's doing 30 knots, to hit her, you know. They've got
so
to
you really transshipped the gold from the harbour.
That's right.
To the Queen Mary.
To the Queen Mary.
You didn't take it over the whole
way. No, we didn't go the whole way.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. We did a lot of work off Iceland and various other places. And like I said, I really can't remember much about...
Can you remember much about the routine on board at that time? It must have been long periods of boredom, was it? Or were you busy all the time? Were you short of sleep?
Oh, always you were short of sleep.
Yeah.
Always short of sleep. Because you went... you were short of sleep because there was always some sort of action going on. You were either being... there were either submarines in the facility or you were being bombed, you see, and so therefore you were at action stations. Always you went to action stations at dusk and dawn. So even if you were off watch, you had to close up again for these dusk and dawn stations. So, I mean, if you were on the middle watch, you worked during the day. The ship had to be worked. I mean, there's still work to be done, even though you may be bound to eternity. There's still work to be done, so someone had to do that. You also have to eat, and you have to sleep. So, you know, being sort of on watch all this time, and very little sleep, and very little to eat. We were always hungry, because on a destroyer, you can imagine what it's like. You're never still for any length of time. I mean, it was as much as the old cook to do to cook you a bit of grub. He was there all the time trying to keep it on the galley stove, and very seldom was able to bake any bread. So you were on the hard tack, you know, biscuits.
Did you suffer from seasickness at all?
I was always very good. I can remember going to going to see sea training. We went from Plymouth to Dartmouth, and we got outside, and it was a bit rough, and I was as sick as a dog. We were smoking Ardath cigarettes out on the starboard waist there, as many as we could get into us, and whether it was them or not, I never liked Ardath after that day, but I was as absolutely as sick as a dog. But that was the only time that I can remember being sick in the Navy. I didn't mind the rough weather at all, from that point of view, being sick. And yet we had old-timers on board who were sick every time. Every time they went to sea, they were sick. But they soon got over it. they'd say, thank God, you know, let's get outside. And they'd come back in and say, oh, that's it. I've been sick. I've brought it all up. I should be all right now. But
what about clothing? I mean, when you're on convoy duties, you virtually lived and slept in your clothes, didn't you? I mean, did you ever have time for a shower or anything?
No. You didn't have showers. No such thing as a shower at that time. There was just a washroom, which was like a big trough arrangement, and everyone washed in that, and you did that as and when you could. You virtually kept the same clothing on. In fact, at the early part of the war, I mean, we didn't have good clothing, good warm clothing. This was before people started knitting for the troops, sort of thing, with balaclavas and scarves. We didn't have any of that. And we, as boys, virtually went to sea with just our oilskins, which, as you know, were ruddy things, oilskins. There was no warmth in them at all. They were stiff as a nun's habit. And you just stood up in those with no warmth at all. So if you were off watch, you usually loaned your oilskin or whatever warm clothing you had to the person who was on watch. And you swapped over. You sort of got out of whatever you were in and gave to him and went below and turned in. But of course, it was always wet. It was always cold. The decks were always awash. The mess decks were terrible. They stunk. The condensation from the deckhead would be dripping down on you all the time.
And all the portholes always kept shut.
Oh yes, the deadlights were always down.
But didn't you have any air circulated?
Not on destroyers. Mm. Not on destroyers. I think eventually they gave us these little fans, which you see in offices today. But there was very very little of that.
And your mess decks were up in the forecastle, always.
Right up next to the paint store, which always stunk of paint and red lead, and there you were, there you stopped. Yeah. I mean, some fellas wouldn't bother to get out of their bunks, and they'd piddle in an empty tickler tin, you know, and tie that to the fan shaft above their hammock. So all this sort of built up to one big smell, really. It was a shocking place.
What about Captain's rounds?
Place to be.
Did he still do it?
Well, he did, but he didn't at sea like that. I mean, a captain, good destroyer captain, was always on the bridge. Yeah. Old Captain Walters on the Fame, he lived there. And indeed, I think it was his downfall in the end, because he just couldn't take any more. He never turned in. He was always asleep. He was always there when I went on watch, and he was always...
Always awake,
He was always awake, or appeared to be awake. Yeah. I mean, he'd be sat up in the bridge on his chair, and I suppose eventually he would nod off a little bit, but he was always there looking out.
What about relationships on the mess deck between you and your mates? They were good, were they, or...
there was very seldom any problems. I don't know if you know anything about, you've heard about wingers, have you?
Mm-hmm.
Because, well,
friends,
that's right. On a destroyer, you see, it was usual for some of the older hands to sort of take the boys under the wing and look after them. I know that there are all sorts of tales of sexual nature, you know, things going on, but that didn't happen in actual fact. They were genuinely sorry, I suppose, for us boys, because we never had any money. Not too much to eat. I mean, they'd give us eat or buy us a bar of chocolate or something from the canteen. But in general, they looked after us. I can remember this. I got an idea that we were on our way to Narvik then. That a certain able seaman, I don't know what his name was. I can't remember now. that he started to touch me up, and I wasn't having any of that, and I laid into him, and I got him bent over one of the ammunition hoists. I was going to really lay into him, but he gave me one. He gave me a black eye, and of course I had to go and watch, didn't I? And I went on the bridge, and the old man was furious. He said, "I suppose you realise that you know you're useless. You're not going to be able to see anything with that." And I think this bloke had about 14 days for that. But on the whole, they were very, very good. I mean, we made our own entertainment. Some of these, to listen to the tales of some of these old three badgers was amazing. That was all part of entertainment. You'd have a sort of sods opera, if you like, whereby you sat in a little group, and and everyone in turn, you either recited poetry, or you sang a song, told a tale. You had to do something, providing it was a little bit funny and it made a laugh. That was great. It was good entertainment. But some of these old timers, you know, they could tell us yarns about being 3.5 to 5 years on the China station, and they'd done this and they'd done this, and they would mix. We had one fella. What the devil do we call him? Bollocky Thomas. And he'd been in since time began, since Nelson's day, sort of thing. And he would spin these yarns, and he would start with an ordinary tale, and he'd finish up talking about Jerusalem and Nazareth and being thrown into the darkest of dungeons with 40 big marines and being ragged, bagged and shagged and all the rest of it. And, you know, this was all wonderful entertainment. And like I say, I could always tell them about the old timers, you know, drinking their pints of beer up here, and you could see their lips, you know. Good God, you know, they can imagine themselves drinking this beer and being served up with a barmaid, you know, with tits like Dolly Parton and something. And this was all good stuff, because of course there was no radio. We didn't have a radio on board.
Because even the senior rates would have been through the First World War, I suppose, wouldn't they?
Oh, exactly. Of course they would.
They'd been through Jutland and places like
that. Oh, yes, that's right. They had wonderful yarns to spin.
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah,
that's right. Mahjong was another game.
Yeah.
This was a sort of Chinese dominoes, if you like. We used to play a lot of that. And, of course, Ludo, which is hookers, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That was usual.
Now tell me a bit about Narvik now. I mean, that was really the first big naval engagement of the war, wasn't it?
Oh, that's right, yes.
And
yeah.
You were in Scarborough at the time, were you, when you were called up there, or what?
Yes.
The Germans invaded Norway.
Yes. In fact, no, I think we were actually in Norway then. I think I said previously, we were there to... The naval battles had finished. They had just about finished, but the Germans were still coming in. We used to watch them coming in. We Bjerkvik, we evacuated a German, Bjerkvik, as the Germans were coming in.
Mm.
We could see them, and the whole flotilla went right up on the beach, stuck our bows up on the beach. We took on board the civilians as the Germans were coming in at the rear of the village or town, whatever it was, and the warspout and the cruisers were further out lobbing shells over at them. So they were lobbing at the Germans, and we were taking on the civilians. And
where did you take the civilians to?
I think we took them to Harstad.
Uh-huh. Mm.
We took an awful lot of old people, I know, on board, and I'm pretty sure it was...
But you were part of the force with the warspite, weren't you, that engaged those destroyers?
Oh, that's right, yes. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, they were, I believe, the Hardy and the Hunter and people like the H.
Oh, yes.
There, weren't they?
Poor old Hardy was, we used to...
And Warburton Lee got a VC or something there, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
What was your part in that engagement?
Ah, we didn't have a... We were left there purely to assist the land forces. And that's what we did. We patrolled between Harstad and Rombach's Fjord. And I always remember going back to your story just now about the iron ore. On the other side of Narvik, the railway comes out of a tunnel and disappears into another tunnel further up at the end of Rombach's Fjord. And we had our usual 400 or 500 Alpine troops on board, which we were going to land somewhere, find a suitable landing place for them. They'd go ashore, do their bit, and they'd come back on board. And we were steaming up there, Rombach's Fjord, nice and quietly, a beautiful day, sunshine out, we hadn't had any bombing, all was peace. When suddenly, whoosh, and a ruddy something or other came right through one side of the bridge and went out the other. And before we knew what was happening, they'd pumped this howitzer, which I talked about, they'd put this on a railway carriage, and they'd come out of this tunnel, you see, and were pumping shell after shell into us before we could do anything about it. We had two guns closed up. A gun, B gun, and X gun. Now, X gun had a misfire, which, as you know, entails removing, finding out what why it misfired. There is a routine to go through, you know. Still misfire, carry on, intercept was closed, breech closed, gun out, circuits apparently correct, switch to director, intercept now open, shift tube, shift circuit, and you sort of start firing again in wartime. But in peacetime, you would have waited half an hour because there are always the chance that the cordite is going to go off. And as you know, cordite's very volatile. You know, it's terrific heat, terrific fire. And as soon as they opened the breach, this is exactly what happened. The cordite went off. It started to burn. And, of course, it burnt all the gun's crew on X gun. A gun had, of course, received the orders to train on a bearing, green 4-5, angle of sight 2-0, rapid fire, independent rapid fire. And as they trained round, as the trainer trained his gun, his scarf, which he had round his neck, caught in the wheel, in the trainer's wheel, and he was turning, he was choking himself. He wasn't training the gun at all. So they were firing at us, you see, and we weren't answering back. And we didn't, in fact, until the other gun screws closed up. So we had a lot of people killed on board. Some of the shells went into the engine room and exploded. Some, as I said, went straight through. Through one side, the funnel, out exploded, the other. Yeah. We were that near. I mean, we were only on there.
Yeah.
Just on across the road.
Yeah.
And
what medical facilities did you have for treating casualties?
Well, they were virtually sick berth attendant, and there was, I don't think we had a doctor as such. No. We had an officer who sort of seconded as a doctor.
Things like shell dressings and so on, I suppose, didn't
you? Oh, the usual, that's right, oh, yeah. They were sort of usually brought onto the mess deck and laid out on the lockers and dealt with as best they could. The old man could administer morphine and that sort of thing.
So what was the outcome of that engagement?
The outcome was that, of course, we closed up the other guns and we were able to block the entrances to the tunnels. Mm. And we managed to get away from that. We did. We picked up a torpedo, which was fired at the Eskimo. The Eskimo was hit and had her bows blown off. That was in Rombach's Fjord. But she managed to after she'd had her, was hit in the bow, she managed to go astern, and the torpedoes followed her, and eventually she got out of the way and they ran aground, and we picked those torpedoes up later on. And I always remember after the war being sent up to an exhibition on the South Pier at Blackpool with, what should it be, this torpedo, this German torpedo. You see, this was quite a thing for the public to look at.
The detonator was live on it there, wasn't it?
Well, it was not then.
No, but I mean when you picked them up.
Oh, good Lord, yeah. That's right.
So I mean, why did you pick them up? Why did you just sort of take a pop shot at them and blow them up?
Well, I suppose they wanted to learn something about this. Yeah. I mean, that was the idea, wasn't it? To learn what you can about these things. No. So, yes, but...
So how long were you up in Narvik then?
Well, we were there from April... May, June, I had a birthday up there. I think I had my 18th birthday, may have been 19th birthday, in Narvik. And then we came, we left when the engagements finished up, when the Germans eventually overrun the place. And we came down, we were ordered to Bodø, and we picked up 500 or 600 Welsh Guardsmen, who had walked from God knows where, but they were absolutely shattered and out to this world. And we took them all on board. Of course, as soon as we got outside, we were being bombed, and the old man was doing his harder starboard bit, harder port. And of course, you can imagine, with these 500 on board, we were heavily laden. We were over top heavy, I suppose.
Normal ship's company is only about 500, isn't it?
120, 130.
That's right.
And like I say, as soon as we got outside the harbour, with what with the bombing and one thing and another, and we were hit in a few nice little troughs, and these they were all sick over each other. We had to clean all that lot up eventually, but we did. We brought them. I don't know where we brought them to. I can't remember. So things were getting a little bit hazy then at that time. You know, we'd had enough, really, of bombing, because we were bombed every day and sometimes all day. And it was only the skill of the old man, really, you know, that got us out of it. He was good old hard as starboard Walters, as we called him. But... if he could see the bombs, and very often you watch these bombs coming down, you know, and I thought, my God, you know, we're going to get it this time. In fact, just after Bodø, we were ordered to go to the rescue of the submarine Shark, which couldn't submerge. It was off the Norwegian coast. And she couldn't submerge for some reason or other, and she was virtually trapped there. And we were sent over there with the Penelope and the Aurora and a couple more destroyers of F-boats to see what we could do. Anyway, we got there and we saw her, and we sent an officer and probably Jimmy the One, and one or two more over there to find things out what was happening. And the Germans came over, and I think there must have been perhaps 30 of them, you know. And I can plainly see these coming towards us, and of course you know that they're not going anywhere else. You're the ones they're going to get. They're after you, and you can see the bombs coming out the bottom of the plane, coming down towards you, and they hit the water a few hundred yards away, and they're getting nearer and nearer, and then suddenly the old ship, whoosh, goes up out of the water, sort of virtually lifts out the water and falls back in. And as a result of that, we were hit several times. We were hit on the stern, badly on the stern. And I suppose we were virtually sinking. We threw all the ammunition overboard, depth charges, anything of any weight. We chucked it overboard and eventually managed to keep the stern of the ship afloat.